Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Well, we speak in this atmosphere and we say, let there be light. This month we're talking about these two words, a lot of energy on these words, breaking free. I felt it a few minutes ago when Judah was leading that there's such a power of that declaration. My chains are gone. I've been set free. That kind of worship I can get behind. Not the kind of worship that says, you know, God can never be pleased and he's always mad at me and I'm always doing a mea culpa. I don't even relate to that. But if you want to sing a song that says, my chains are gone, I've been set free, yeah, sign me up for that. I'll be happy to sing that with a group of people that I'm in agreement with. Our whole title is Breaking Free, Expanding Consciousness by the Infinite Wisdom of the Ages. Don't be afraid of the word consciousness. It's a good word. Consciousness is a little bit different meaning than the word mind. Mind is what, for each of us, our mind is what has collapsed out of consciousness. Do you understand? It's like the way I think is what I have learned in this time that I've been on the earth. I've learned to think a certain way, but consciousness is a higher thing. I think a lot of times what in the church, what we used to call the anointing was really consciousness. We just didn't have a better word for it. But when we tapped into that thing, even I think a lot of times what I used to define as walking in the spirit, it's not that I'm against that term, but I think that was really, when I hear somebody talking about walking in higher consciousness, I think that's the same thing. You're talking about the same thing. You know what that's like when there are just certain things you can do to raise your vibrational level. Forgiveness is always one of them. Certainly the words of your mouth. I thank God for everything I learned in the faith movement because all of that stuff was valid. So all of the, you know, acts of kindness, sometimes even when I've done this intentionally before. If I'm feeling too sorry for myself, I'll go make myself do something for somebody else. And it gets you out of yourself. Because let me tell you something. I'm gonna maybe talk about some of this next week, but victimization is a dead end street. It's just a dead end. If it's even in your mind to say life's unfair, you've got to really rethink that. Because once you get on that side of saying life's unfair, you start attracting so much, so many injustices. And your life becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that whenever the next person that rejects you, you're like, see, there it is. Nothing ever works out for me. And you don't even realize you're creating the cycle. If you ever see yourself getting into that victim mentality, please, for God's sake, break it. Because I'm telling you, it's dangerous. It gets you on a downward spiral and you say, well, you don't know my story. Baby, we've all got bad stories. Everybody in it, some are worse than others, I guess. But every one of us has been stabbed in the back. We've been rejected. We've been disappointed. Things haven't worked out like we've got questions that haven't been answered. That's just called life. And if you start thinking that somebody else has some inside track, well, everything works out for them. No, that's not the way it works. I remember, this isn't terminology I would use now, but I remember I had a roommate in college one time who, I said something positive to him, and he said, yeah, that's easy for you to say. He said, you just believe the word because everything works out for you. And I said, no, I think everything works out for me because I believe the word. And nuh-uh, you just believe the Bible because you have such a good life. I said, no, I have a good life because, you know, it's like, it's a chicken or egg, you know? And that's the way he saw it. I am victimized by life. And if I had had your circumstances, then I would have an optimistic outlook. Look, there are things that have happened to all of us that can certainly influence our paradigm, but you're, at the end of the day, the steward of the way you look at things. And if you see that, oh, as soon as you even think, woe is me, or whatever, you got to compartmentalize. Like, this week, I mean, I don't think it's any big secret. I've had a little physical challenge. It never occurs to me to say, why is this happening to me? I think proactively, well, I need to get more rest. And, you know, because remember when, and this is just typical of religious people, but remember when the Pharisees brought the blind boy to Jesus and they said, why is he blind? Because he sinned or because his parents sinned? Like, they're wanting to know what caused this. And Jesus said, you're missing the point. He said, what matters is this is a chance for the glory of God to be revealed. But they were obsessed with, why did this happen to me? Can I just tell you something? Some things just happen. Like, I believe in laws of attraction, absolutely, and I think, but some things just happen. It's, again, it's just life. The only Western I ever liked was Tombstone, and I've seen it like 40 times. But I love that when Wyatt Earp is dying, and he goes, it's not a good life, a bad life, Wyatt. It's just life. And when he says it, I think, yeah, you're right, Wyatt Earp, played by Val Kilmer, who was just in a movie with Jared. You'd have to, look quick to see that that was Jared on the stage with him. But Val Kilmer was playing a rock and roll, an aged rock and roll guy, and they were actually using Jared's bass amp, and Val Kilmer broke it. Like, he smashed it. They replaced it, but Jared was like, I didn't know that was in the script. And they cut it out of the movie, but anyway. But I liked him better when he was Wyatt Earp. I'm your Huckleberry. I love it. Yeah, he's from Valdosta. Doc Holliday. Yeah. I live to teach. Anyway, because we're talking about tapping into infinite wisdom, raising consciousness, I want to talk about the infinite wisdom that's been manifested here in the earth as nature. I've talked a little bit about this before, but I want to come back to it. And let me say this. I am an unapologetic city boy. I do love the city. I don't make any, when that buck ran through Ken's windshield a few months ago, I said, see, this is why people need to live in the city where it's safe. And the city deer aren't running through your... And then recently, it's not good. The woman's in bad shape, but some neighbors of his, the cows got out on the road where his dad lives, and they ran into him. I said, that's why you need to live in the city. Ain't no cows on I-85. However, I love nature. I need nature. I know what that's like to say, I need to go to the beach. I need to go stand in this. I don't like to swim out in the ocean that much these days, but I do like to be near it. I want to look at it. I want to experience it. There's something about standing in the surf and watching that wave come in and out. It recalibrates your body clock. We're largely made up of water, so there's something, essentially that connects us to water. We want to look at it. We want to be near it. Especially in the fall, I want to walk in some mountains. I want to see, I am very, just because I love the city doesn't mean I'm not connected to nature. And I know that nature teaches us. And I want to show, I've used the scripture before, but this just blows me away. This is out of Job. This is chapter 12, verse 7 through 12 in the Message. Look what he says here. It's funny because people say, everything you need is in the Bible. And you go back and read the Bible. The Bible says, don't read the Bible. Go out to nature. Here he says, but ask the animals what they think. If I could talk to the animals, just imagine it. Let them teach you. Let the birds tell you what's going on. All right, think about it. Just how many things can you learn just from the birds? There's this movie. I'm not finished yet. I'll be back in a minute, Michelle. But my mom's a big bird lover, and a few years ago, I took her to see this movie called Winged Migration. I don't know how they filmed this, but they tracked these flocks of birds for a year. They did it with weather balloons. It's amazing how these birds all know there's highways in the sky. They even notice certain buildings, certain landmarks to let them know they're on the road. That's amazing how they instinctively know what to do. Any of you that have ever had a dog or a cat that had puppies or kittens, cat doesn't freak out and say, get me a midwife, or, they know what to do. It's just instinctive, and it makes you wonder, when we're in our most simplified state, do we know what's right for us? Is it the fact that we've been so institutionalized away from what we call instincts in the animal kingdom? So he says, go, let the birds tell you what's going on. In other words, there's things you're not going to find in the Bible. You're going to look up in the sky. Put your ear to the earth. Learn the basics. Listen, the fish in the ocean will tell you their stories. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't it clear that they all know and agree that God is sovereign, that he holds all things in his hand, every living soul, yes, every breathing creature? Isn't this all just common sense, as common as the sense of taste? That's eternal wisdom. Do you think the elderly have a corner on wisdom, that you have to grow old before you understand life? And the answer is no. You can know things now. I remember back when I was in my little window of being a hunter, only because I was friends with a Braves player who was a hunter that wanted me to be a hunter, and because I liked my relationship with him, I did it, but it wasn't my thing. But one time he and a friend took me hunting, and this friend that he actually flew in for us to go hunting together, and this guy was like a Daniel Boone. This guy would go out. He lived out in the woods, and he'd go out and kill a bear and bring it home by himself. And like one time, I saw him in San Francisco, and that day he had gone to the bottom of the bay to get abalone, and came back and made it. I mean, that's how he was. Well, there was this moment where he and I were kind of alone together talking, and he said. He had said a swear word, and he said, "Man, I'm sorry. I don't mean to swear in front of a preacher." He's like, "I tell you, I'm a little nervous being out here with you. I'm not used to being around ministers, and I just feel like you know a lot of stuff I don't know." And I said, "Dude, let me explain something to you." I said, "Out here, I don't want to say moron, but believe me, of the two of us in this setting, you're the smart one." So... and you know what he told me later? Because I know I've told you all this story before, but it's my only hunting story, so indulge me. Later, after, you know, I don't think this was the trip that I got the boar. This is the second trip. But he told me, he said, I would rather hunt with somebody like you who just knows he doesn't know anything and follows instructions rather than some of these hotshot guys that are so full of testosterone you can't tell them anything, and they go out and shoot your $5,000 dog. He said, at least you understand your limitations. That's not exactly how he said it, but that's what he was meaning. He said, so I would hunt with you anytime. Because I'm just thinking, dear God, please don't let me, A, embarrass myself, or shoot somebody, or shoot a dog. Because it's kind of scary, you know, when the dogs start barking around the boar, and you're trying to do it, and they're like, don't shoot my dog, don't shoot my dog. You're like, I don't want to shoot anything. I don't even want to be out here. They hand you a knife, and you're like, dude, I swear I'm not going to get close enough to plunge a knife into anything. I can tell you that's not going to happen. I'm just getting my head wrapped around a bullet, and that's only for a pig. I don't know that I could kill a deer. Anyway, and even after I killed the pig, nobody knew this, but I sat in the car and cried for a minute because I'd never killed anything. And they were all like high-fiving each other. I'm like, I know, it's great, isn't it? I'm a killer now. Yay. But even Hank Williams Jr., Bocephus, he had the famous country song, A Country Boy Can't Survive. And there's a real truth to that, that where you're smart in your environment. And I love when you meet those people that are really connected to nature. However, another story I've told you is I took a group down to Peru one time. We were doing some meetings and building a house and stuff. And the brother of the pastor that was our host was like, he was a survivalist. Like he was one of these guys that, like these big game hunters would fly to the Amazon and hire him to take them into the rainforest. And so he was telling us, he was just giving us some pointers of how you could survive if you did get stuck in the jungle for the night. And he was a little bit cheeky, and he said, I can just tell you, he said, you guys, you city people wouldn't last 24 hours out here. And I said, well, that may be, but I would put my chances of surviving up against your chances of surviving 5 o'clock traffic on I-285 in Atlanta. Now, that's the survival of the fittest. Like, I get it. I understand there's anaconda and tarantulas and everything, but there's drunk drivers where I live. So it depends on, you know, like, Like some people ask me, well, how do you stand living in the city with all the traffic? Because I live in the city and I know what places to avoid at certain times of the day. This is my environment. Even if I take an Uber home sometimes, I'll say, look, I know GPS is going to tell you a certain way, but at this time of day, you probably don't want to go Spring Street because I'm telling you, it's going to be backed up from West Peachtree all the way down. And they'll always say, well, thanks. How should I go? I'm going to tell you something. If you go down here to Crawford Long or Emory, and if you take a right, and then you do this, and you go around this way, it's going to save you a good 15 minutes and a lot of hassle. And they're like, man, thank you. How do you know this? Because this is my environment. But I also know when I'm out of my environment to not act like I know something that I don't know. And, you know, there's just things, like I remember times in my life when I've gone fishing before, just because I haven't done it enough. You know, if you're not familiar with the way the drag feels on your line, you keep thinking you're having a bite. Just because you're not skilled enough to know. When I, not deep sea fishing so much, but like freshwater fishing, if I've ever done it, I'm always pulling my rod out because I think, no, it's the current, but it feels like a nibble. But an experienced fisherman will just laugh at you, and they're like, oh, man, you don't even know what you're doing. And that's why I throw them into the lake. But I love this because Job is saying, or one is actually one of his friends is saying, there are things you can learn from the animal kingdom. That's true. Even, I think some Christians have an issue with the idea of somebody having a spirit animal like the Native Americans have. But I don't see anything. I think that's very powerful because, like all in the scriptures, the lion is used, the lamb is used, the eagle. Like all of these animal symbols are, you know, things that teach us something. And we learn, you know, you think about how diverse the animal kingdom is. There's so many things we learn from, I'm not enough of a dog person to actually have one, but I understand why people love dogs because they really do teach you about unconditional love and loyalty and whatever. You know, a cat, not so much. I love cats, but cats are a different kind of thing. You know, you walk in and a cat's like, you know, maybe I'll speak to you, maybe I won't. A dog's not cool enough to let you know that he's not thrilled to see you, even if your last experience with him wasn't all that good. Sorry. It's going to be a lot of on again, off again today, so just... Is this what women in menopause feel like when you're having hot flashes? My heart goes out to you. Anyway, and then this is the classic that Jesus said. And I don't think Jesus was just being poetic here. I really do think this is a commandment. This is chapter 6, verse 25 through 34 of the Message. It's where in the King James says, consider the lilies. Here he says, if you decide for God, living a life of God worship, it follows that you don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes or whether the clothes in your closet are in fashion. There is far more to your life than the food you put in your stomach, more to your outer appearance than the clothes you hang on your body. Look at the birds, free and unfettered, not tied down to a job description, careless in the care of God. Isn't that a beautiful phrase? And you count far more to him than birds. Has anyone by fussing in front of the mirror ever gotten taller by so much as an inch? All this time and money wasted on fashion. Do you think it makes that much difference? Instead of looking at the fashions, walk out into the fields and look at the wildflowers. They never primp or shop, but have you ever seen color and design quite like it? The 10 best-dressed men and women in the country look shabby alongside them. If God gives such attention to the appearance of wildflowers, most of which are never even seen, don't you think he'll attend to you, take pride in you, and do his best for you? What I'm trying to do here is to get you to relax, to not be so preoccupied with getting, so you can respond to God's giving. People who don't know God and the way he works fuss over these things, but you know both God and how he works. Steep your life in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. Don't worry about missing out. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Give your entire attention to what God is doing right now and don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. Now, obviously, we can't just all go out and sit in the field and wait for something to happen. I was watching on Netflix, they were showing some series about, they have a series about each of the decades. And one of them They've got one that's on the 60s, and it was riveting. I watched every bit of it. But there was one that was all about the hippie movement, and it was interesting hearing these people that lived in San Francisco in the late 60s, their ideal of what the world would be like. You can see why, especially in that generation, why there was a whole group of kids that bought into that idea that, you know, communal living, and we're not caught up with the materialism of our parents, whatever. And it was really interesting hearing some of these people who are now in their 60s and 70s talking about how idealistic they were. And really, it was interesting. I've always had a theory about this, and they sort of verified it, that with the Manson murders, that kind of ended that reality. It's like that everything that you thought was good about love and flower power and everything, that just you know, and then that ushered in the disco era, in the me decade. But I was listening to, they were talking about, like this one guy was saying, he said, I know everybody thinks it was just about drugs and sex and everything, but he said, but honestly, there was a time, he said it was a short amount of time, but there was a time where it was just wonderful. He said it was really beautiful. Everybody, like, you know, especially up and down in the Haight-Ashbury section of San Francisco, you could go in places and get free food. People just, like, there was free health care. It was nearly like a socialist utopia that eventually, you know, had a downside to it. It certainly did. But it was just interesting when you read a scripture like this, you could make the case for Jesus being the original hippie. Now, there's other scriptures you could make him the original whatever. Yeah, you can, there's any Jesus you want you can find in the Gospels. But here he's saying, you know, get some balance in your life. And really, that's what nature will do for you. There's something to like going to the beach or going to the mountains or a walk in the woods or even just being in your yard. I know some of you, I read some of the things Francis or Eddie writes about your yard or whatever, and I see that it's really, it's a beautiful thing for you. I mean, it's kind of the way, I'm not really into horticulture like that, but I understand that's the way I feel in the art studio. It's like very cathartic for me. I can go in there and paint, and oh my God, is it really, has it been 4 hours? I can't believe the way the time goes, because it feels that way for me. But I especially understand why planting things and seeing things grow. I mean, the majority of what Jesus talked about was agriculture. I mean, nearly every parable he gave was about planting seeds. So there clearly is something to that, and it is miraculous. You know, you look around, I mean, once in a while they fall over and kill somebody, but I love all the live oaks here around, you know, the Atlanta area. When you fly into Atlanta, it's, you know, you can see why they call it a city in a forest, because it's just so totally green. And especially in these old Atlanta neighborhoods, just the oak trees. There's even a way they smell in the fall. It reminds me of my grandparents' house. I really love them. And you look at it, if you had never seen an acorn and somebody said to you, that came out of that, you'd be like, there's no possible way. But it does. And so there's so many things. Like, for instance, when Jesus talked about, now there's one of the parables of the seed, he does talk about literally the size of the seed. You know, he says, if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed. But in another one, he's not talking about the size of it. He's talking about the fact that the seed already knows it has what it has in its DNA. It doesn't try to become the oak tree or the palm tree or whatever. It just already knows that it is. And there's even a whole, one of the most amazing things Jesus ever said, and if you've ever been through a death experience and survived it, you'll know what he meant by this. But he says, unless a seed falls in the ground and dies, it can't live. That, man, that has brought me through. That verse of scripture has kept my sanity on more than one occasion. When you just feel like, this thing's going to kill me, and then you think, unless a grain of wheat falls in the ground, it dies. Because literally, that's what happens. The seed actually dies, and out of the death, life comes out of it. And that's the whole concept of going from glory to glory. And, you know, the Buddhist turned it into reincarnation. I don't necessarily believe you come back as another animal, but I do believe you go through death experiences and you're resurrected as something else. And it, you know, what I taught you on Easter, like, the butterfly can't go back and play with the caterpillars anymore. There's a certain loneliness that happens with evolution because you move on and other people haven't, and that's a whole other thing. But there's so much, I mean, you all know how good it is to walk. It's so good for you. I mean, walking is really better for you than running. I mean, because it's just, you know, it's better on your joints. But so many times, I'm not saying some people don't need antidepressants. If you're medicated, do what you got to do. But I'm telling you, most times, a walk, I'm not saying it'll really cure bipolar or anything like that, but it'll give you a different perspective. Get some fresh air, make some contact with something with chlorophyll in it, because there's something about the green. You know, ever since we talked about vitamin D with blood pressure, every day when I get in the car, first thing I do is I let my roof back, and you know, if I'm a little bit, I want to get some sun. People say, well, give us some sunscreen. I know what sunscreen is. Shut up. I'm saying you need a couple of times we've gone out of town, we've rented a convertible, and we'll post a picture and be like, you better put sunscreen. And I'm like, I hate you. We're grandparents. We know what sunscreen is. We're just taking a picture for a minute. Would you stop being a granny for 2 seconds? Yeah, I'm being put on sunscreen. Like, I'm friending you. You're supposed to go, oh my God, that car looks like so much fun. Not even me. Like, yes, I know what sunscreen is. God. Half the time, we're not even that red. It's something that it's a filter he puts on and makes us look more tan than we actually are. Y'all are getting too much sun out there. No, it's an app on the phone. Mind your own business. Like even when, and it was some of y'all, so don't be offended me when I say this, but when that dog scratched me, you probably 40 people, like, you better put something on that. I'm like, no. What? I have never heard of that. Now, don't be mad at me because it was about half of y'all in here. But, and I know y'all love me, but yeah, I know. Anyway, the point, you better get that scene about, like, I know, I'm good. Thank you for caring. Anyway, I was reading after this guy, you know, there's a whole school of thought of why you eat different colors of food, that different colored food have different properties, like orange food has beta carotene in it. And did you know yellow food is actually an antidepressant? That, like, this guy who's a doctor, he says next time you're just feeling, I'm not saying this is going to cure some extreme thing that really needs medication. I'm just talking about if you're just got the blues. You know, one of the best things if you like it is pineapple. You cut up a pineapple. Pineapple it's like a natural antidepressant. And there's something about yellow foods, whether it's grapefruit or whatever, it's a mood elevator. Now, I don't know if it's a placebo or not, but I can tell you now, after I heard that, every time I eat pineapple, I'm like, it's the most wonderful time of the year. I mean, maybe it's the power of suggestion. I don't know. But a little yellow food could just pick me right on up. Not as much as a Snickers bar, but it will. I do know the Snickers bar high is short-lived. It's like I'm going to feel really elated for about 10 minutes, and then I'm going to have a little bit of a crash, and then you do a peanut M&M chaser. Anyway, let me show you. I like this quote. It says, so good. You didn't come into this world. You came out of it like a wave from the ocean. You are not a stranger here. You know, whether you believe the Genesis story is literal or not, the fact is, in the story of creation, Adam isn't spoken into existence. He's brought up out of the earth. You know, God takes the, whether it's literal or not, God takes the dust and he breathes in it. And that's really interesting because he didn't do that with the animals. If you follow the logic of the story, you know, the animals just kind of appear. But he's the earth, that's why the term Mother Earth is really a godly term, because the earth actually did mother us. And you know what's really interesting? We say there are black people and white people and red people and yellow people, but really we're all the same color. We're just different increments on the melanin line. And if you've traveled around the world, like you can go to the Caribbean or Panama City Beach and the sand is white as refined sugar. You go to the Philippines And that sand is black as it's like ebony. And I've been places in Africa where the beach was red, where it's brown. I mean, I've been to beaches all over the earth that can nearly correspond to every skin tone that is reflected. So if you think about the idea, if you think about the idea of Adam being made from the earth, well, what does the earth look like? Well, if he was made from Georgia, he'd be red. And it's so interesting. Geology is fascinating to me, but my friend Howie, you know, I tell you about his parents. He grew up in Paraguay. His parents were missionaries. And if you ever look at a map of the soil on the earth, it's like it goes in bands. And he said, Paraguay is as far south of the equator as Georgia is north of it. And he said, it's red clay. It looks just like you'd think you were in Georgia. And I thought, isn't that really interesting that you don't see that in Florida? If you go to Florida, it's sandy and it doesn't look like that at all. But there's black dirt, there's red dirt, there's gray dirt. There's like whatever skin tone you are, you can trace yourself back to Adam because you were birthed out of the earth. Isn't that just amazing? And that's why, I mean, after you're an adult, it's rare that you're going to run around outside barefoot, but there is something about actually making contact. I mean, it's easier to do it on the beach, but there's something about actually making contact. Remember when you were a kid and you ran around barefoot? There was such an energy to it that you were, and you know, we've talked about this before, there's a whole teaching about grounding where people will go stand barefoot and they also recalibrate their body clock. And it even, there's even evidence that it detoxifies you, that if you stand on the earth is so compassionate to you, it actually will draw toxins out of your body. That's why sometimes you feel like if you come back from a vacation at the beach, it's not just that you were out of town. It's like there was something that happened to you with that sand and that water. It affected you physically more than you realize. It wasn't just getting out of town. It was actually putting your feet on the earth and making contact with it. And, you know, you think about, I mean, I didn't play with a lot of kids, but I was outside a lot. And I do remember, you know, there were little kids in the neighborhood that I could play with. And we rode bikes a lot. But I can remember laying in the grass for a long time and looking up at just watching the clouds. And you think, when do I ever do that? Now, you have to make yourself go out and look at it. The great, we haven't sung it in so long, but the great anthem, How Great Thou Art, that's the premise of that song. O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands have made, I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder, thy power throughout the earth, and then sings my soul. I didn't read it in the Bible. I saw it in creation. There were things that the Grand Canyon taught me that, you know, 1,000 Bibles couldn't teach me. Or looking out at the night sky or looking at the stars. Sometimes, you know, if you think your problems are so humongous, you read a little bit about how many, there are more planets in just our part of the universe than there are grains of sand on the earth. Isn't that amazing? You start realizing how, and I don't know how they know this, but they say the universe is expanding. Sometimes it messes with my head. It just nearly, like, I can't, that's all I can interpret of that. But it does put things in perspective. You think maybe my little drama that I'm going through right now is not that big a deal. You know, go watch an episode of Horton Hears a Who, and you realize we're smaller in context than Horton and all of Whoville. This next quote, Alfred Billing Street, I guess for those of you listening to this podcast, I guess I should read this. I love this. He says, nature is man's teacher. She unfolds her treasure to his search, unseals his eye, illumines his mind, and purifies his heart. An influence breathes from all the sights and sounds of her existence. That's basically just saying what we read in Job, that there are things, if you'll get quiet and go outside and commune with nature. And I'll tell you something else. If you can't actually get outside, something like yesterday, for instance, we were, I had to go by the studio, and then we went and had lunch. we were going to go somewhere else, and then I said, I just need to go back and rest for the rest of the day. But I said, I'm going to go by Starbucks, and let me work on my outlines. I feel better when I get that to them earlier in the day. If I don't do it till late at night, it really stresses me out. So I'm so happy when it's done by 2 o'clock. I'm like, la, la, la. I'm sorry. I really kind of wasn't, I was still really battling in my body. And, when you're on antibiotics, you feel a little better and you're like, I'm good. And then you go, and it's kind of like, you can tell your health is trying to break loose, but you have to be patient with it. You just do. But I just wanted to look at, I love looking at high def pictures of nature scenes, like some of those wallpapers. And I went and found one. It's just a beautiful picture of a wave coming in, and I put a quote on it. And it automatically made me feel better just looking at that picture. I couldn't literally go to the beach yesterday, but just looking at that, there's something about, I just sat there for a minute before I did my outline, just kind of got into that picture. Like, wow, look at that. Look at that sand. Look at those palm trees, whatever. And it actually started making me feel better. So that even if you can't get there, you can at least surround yourself with it. Nature scenes in your house sometimes can be very cathartic. Paintings or whatever. Just because there's something innate in you that wants to connect with it and learn from it. This next quote by the great Thomas Merton, who was a Christian icon. He says, there is in all visible things an invisible fecundity. Fecundity means fruitfulness, the ability to flourish. A dimmed light, a meek namelessness, a hidden wholeness. This mysterious unity and integrity is wisdom, the mother of us all. And then he uses this Latin term, natura naturans. And I was going to try to explain this to you. And I read all about it. There's two Latin phrases that are similar. And one, basically, this one means nature supports itself. Nature recreates itself. The other one, it's a slight different meaning. And I could tell I was taking a rabbit trail on that one. So if you're interested, Google. There is in all things an inexhaustible sweetness and purity, a silence that is a fountain of action and joy. It rises up in wordless gentleness and flows out to me from the unseen roots of all created being. Any of you that are have a history of nature loving probably are familiar with the teachings of St. Francis of Assisi, which the current Pope is, he took his name after him. And St. Francis was very much about finding God in the animal kingdom and being connected with nature. And there is, you look at some of these words that Thomas Merton used, like purity or sweetness or whatever, and that, there's also a harshness to nature. You ever been watching one of those animal shows? Oh, that's so cute. And the next thing, something comes and eats its head off, and you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. I don't know how they get some of those shots. How in the world do they do that? But, there definitely is a food chain. There's nothing personal, but what's the joke about the crocodile that, it was something, he puts the frog puts him on his back, and he says, are you sure you're not going to eat me? And he goes, I'm not going to eat you. And he actually starts eating him. He says, why did you eat? He says, I'm a crocodile. And I was like, what are you? I mean, that's in nature. I used to tell you about Joe finally went to cat heaven, but I used to tell you about our big tomcat, Joe. And it used to aggravate me because he was a very well-fed cat, and yet about every other day you'd walk out the front door and there's something decapitated and dismembered. And you could tell he just thought it was awesome. He'd be over there licking his paw like, you're welcome. Because to him, a dead bird was beautiful. And I used to go, Joe, why? And you got to clean up all the feathers and it's horrible and some little horrible thing. And you realize that has nothing to do with him being hungry. That's just what he did, and he wanted to bring it to the door because to him it was a beautiful gift. And there's no point, I told you this before, but I remember one time there was a hole where chipmunks would come out of, and he was just like laying by it. And every time one would come out, he'd go, And so I had rescued about three of them. I was like, get out of here. Leave the chipmunks alone. I'd already reprimanded him and saved one. And he comes walking around with one in his mouth. And he's looking at me like, I'm a cat. This is what I do. There's no point in you reprimanding and scolding me. I have no shame in this. As soon as I do this, I'm going back to get another one. Stop taking it personally. And you have to realize, well, okay, that's a part of the food chain. But also, they don't, you know, the animal kingdom, as a rule, doesn't just kill for killing's sake. You know, I don't know that I have any hunters in here. I don't want to step on anybody's toes. But there is a difference if you hunt for something that you're going to eat. There's a difference to that than some big game hunter that goes out and kills an endangered species just so you can post pictures. Like, really? I don't think you're going to eat that lion that you killed. You know, that's not cool. Exactly. And if I've eaten venison before and it's fine, and quail and whatever. And I mean, I get that. And certainly with fishing, and there's something about eating what you caught that really, there is something really cool about that. I mean, like the few times in my life I've done that, I felt very connected to my ancestors. Like, wow, this is kind of cool. Like, I went out and foraged for food. I have provided food. We are eating food. I didn't just buy this at the grocery store. I killed this and cooked it, you know. So, yes, and that is ethical. The great Walt Whitman, who wrote Leaves of Grass, who's such, these guys like Thoreau and Whitman, I love these guys, they're so ahead of their time. Walt Whitman was gay too, by the way. I'd just like to say, on behalf of the gay community, you're welcome. So sometimes I've thought about doing that, like doing a picture of like Michelangelo's creation or like all these geniuses that were gay, Da Vinci, everybody, just like post some of their work. You know, you're welcome. Anyway, he says, the earth is rude, silent, incomprehensible at first. Be not discouraged. Keep on. There are divine things well enveloped. I swear to you, there are divine things more beautiful than words can tell. What is more amazing? I don't care how many times you've seen it. Aren't you just blown away every time you see a rainbow after it rains? It's like you've never seen it before. And you know, I mean, I understand why the ancients developed it into the story of Noah and, you know, God's promise. And now we know, well, it's actually light refracting through rain particles. But whatever it is, it's just amazing. As many times as you've seen it, you want to take pictures of it. And then if you see a double rainbow, it's like, oh, my God. That's just amazing. I told you one time we did the Thursday night service. This has never happened to me before or since. But it had rained on a Thursday afternoon, and I was coming up right around the corner here in Virginia. I was driving to service that night, and it had been kind of a long day, and that was when I was still in Covington and out here. And I was very spread thin and trying to keep a lot of people happy, and it was a tough time. And it had been raining all afternoon. I was like, God, please, can it just stop raining right before church? You know, could just give me an hour, let people get here. And all of a sudden it stopped raining, and I was driving to Virginia, and I could see a rainbow. It's like a rainbow was over, and I drove through it. Like, I could see it. I was coming up to it. It wasn't an optical illusion. I could see it, and then I looked in my rearview mirror, and I could see it behind me. And I was like, it's like when I came through it, I was like transformed. It was like the power of the rainbow. I was like, it was amazing. I'd never seen anything like that where it just looked so tangible, you know? And then, of course, if you can look at spring, like all these fuchsia, azaleas, and all, if you can look at that and not be blown away, there's something wrong with you. I don't care if you're, let me tell you, this is what I'm so adamant about this. If spring doesn't wow you, and equally with the fall, with all the incredible colors, if you're to the point that it doesn't excite you, you don't need to have any more springs. I mean, I really do. I think if you're that blasé about the earth that you don't care, you don't even want to go see it. I mean, come on. You know, how hard is it to I mean, if nothing else, a certain neighborhood you can ride around, look at the flowers. I mean, for God's sake, it's amazing. It, you know, I see it every year. I've had, what, 59 springs? And I'm still, every time I'm like, oh my God, look at that. And what's amazing is just a few weeks before, you look at these dead things that if you had never seen spring before, and if you said to somebody, a month from now, that's going to be covered with something green and there's going to be these bright flowers on it, you'd be like, that's impossible. And yet it happens every year. You need to repent if that doesn't just blow your mind. I remember I had my first apartment. These were kind of popular back in the late 70s, early 80s, to have a corn plant in your house. Remember those with the like green, shiny leaves? And I had one. It was about this tall. And I lived a lot of places and moved and got married, got divorced, got married. I lived a lot of places. And I took that corn plant with me everywhere. And over the years, finally, the house that we had in Conyers, it had gotten so tall because that house had like a big, the foyer was two-story. So it was probably 14 feet tall after all. And I'd had it for years and years and years. And it had kind of become symbolic to me of, you know, just a lot of things, how it's kind of, you know, it's been with me through thick and thin. And I don't know if you've ever had a plant like that kind of stayed with you.
I had a factory for 38 years.
Did you really? And you know, it becomes kind of really special to you. And all these years, I didn't even know corn plants bloomed. I didn't even know there was a bloom on them. And after easily 20 years, one day I walked in and there's this, it's like overnight, it had this long stalk on it and a big, kind of a fuzzy looking, kind of like a big dandelion, but it smelled good. I was like, what? After all these years, I didn't even know that was possible. And my biggest regret is when we sold that house, the guys that bought the house really wanted it. And I said, I'm going to leave it, but I really love this tree. And I wish I'd kept it because that's how special it was to me. But it really taught me something. I thought, wow, you may think there's nothing in you, but you might be a late bloomer. And man, when it finally did bloom, it was impressive. I was like, way to go, corn plant. I had no idea. After all these, I've moved you 40 times. I had no idea you had this in you. Who knows? If I had kept it, it would have been like Jack and the Beanstalk. It would have finally, I could have climbed up to heaven on it. But those are things that you learn. Things like, I've read some dispute about this. Some people say this is true. Some people say it isn't. But that koi, which are really, they're not goldfish, they're carp. But that they grow to the size of their environment. That if you keep them in a small thing, they stay small. But if you put them in something bigger, isn't that just amazing? But think about what you can learn from that you grow to your environment. Or what's really amazing, I mean, I love those bonsai trees. And sometimes a tree, it'll be 60 years old. But it's this tall, but you take those little constriction things off of it, and you can plant it, and it'll grow to its full potential. Isn't that just amazing? Like, there are infinite lessons you can learn that you couldn't learn in a million years of classrooms, just things that nature just takes for granted. Nature takes care of itself. Nature, even like, you know, you can tell even, like sometimes if you've had to put an animal down that you really loved, but you can tell that animal's ready to go. You know what I mean? Like they're not fighting for survival. They know my season's over with, and you're judging me by human standards. But I've been here, and I'm, you know, I fought a good fight. I've kept the faith. You know, I've had to do it several times, and of course it's always emotional. But it's not like it's never as bad as, it's always much more peaceful than you think it would be. Because you realize they're like, look, we've had a great run. And, you know, nature goes with the flow. You know, when something in nature knows it's time to go, it doesn't fight. You know, your dog never says, hook me up to a, you know, life support. Your dog's like, no, I'm like, really. And I know people that have done that. We had some neighbors that their mastiff had cancer, and it was already an older dog. And they spent a fortune on that poor dog. And I mean, it's their dog, it's their money, whatever. But you think, why would you? The dog has no idea why you're putting it through this. And it would be so much more humane just to let it go. Just because you're, I mean, you know, it wasn't my place to tell them. I wanted to go, I know you think you're being loving, but you're really being selfish. Because this dog has no idea what's going on. And it's, I'm telling you, this dog would be at peace if you just let it go into doggy heaven. And that's something that nature, you know, nature goes on. So many scriptures, Psalm 103, where he says, as for man, his days are as grass, as the flower of the field, for the wind passes over it, and the place thereof shall know it no more, but the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting. And there is something about, as much as you love longevity and all that kind of stuff, there's something about understanding that I came out of God and I came out of the earth, and I'm going to go back to God. I'm going to go back to the earth. And it's not that scary. It's like all, it's all connected. And I can learn that from the animal kingdom. You know, that animals are, they're at peace. You know, they know. Or, and they also know how to medicate themselves. You know, have you ever seen a dog go out in the yard and start eating grass? Like they just instinctively know they need something green. People don't know that. People keep, you know, popping pills. And, I, you know, I'm not anti-medicine, but I'm telling you, I think best case is the more natural you can keep it, the better. And sometimes, you know, we've all been victimized by our culture, and there's only so much we can do. But, there are certain things like no matter how much medicine you take, there's nothing can take the place of vitamin C that actually comes from an orange. Or, there's more vitamin C in broccoli than there is in citrus, which is, you think of vitamin C only being in fruit, but it's, you know, there's everything that you need you can get. That's why, for the most part, if you just have a balanced diet, you're all automatically keeping yourself free from most diseases. Because a huge amount of disease comes from just eating wrong and not eating natural and not eating balanced and or having deficiencies of things. That's why when somebody says, what's your favorite food? I'm like, how could you have a favorite food? I don't understand when people say, I'm a foodie. Baby, we're all foodies. You make it sound like, oh, I'm really into food. Everybody's into food. That's that's called being a person. But I don't even know, how would you have a favorite food? I mean, I'm an omnivore. There's like a handful of things I might not like. But even at that, I can force myself to eat them if I had to. I mean, I don't like raw tomatoes, but I will eat them on it. Just sometimes if the hamburger's messy, I'm like, you know what, just eat it. It's like, you know, it's. I love tomatoes. I don't like them raw. No, I love everything else tomato. Salsa, ketchup, tomato soup, Bloody Marys, you name it. No, and I'm the red, whatever is in tomatoes, I'm all into that. It's just something about raw. I don't like them. And I like every other, I can't think of any other vegetable I don't like. I mean, I like the vegetables that most people think are great. I mean, I love spinach. I love Brussels sprouts. There's nothing green I don't love. I love eggplant. I love all the root vegetables like rutabagas and turnips. And I love this. I mean, my mouth's filling up with water. There's hardly anything I don't like, which is unusual that I don't, but there's something about when they're uncooked. You have to put a little, I'll eat them sun-dried. I know, all you Southern people. If one more person tells me about, there's nothing better than tomato sandwich with mayonnaise, I'm like, y'all, I get it. You've made your point. I'm married to one of them. I hope you're happy. I'm Southern too. Don't you try to out-Southern me. I will grits and turnip green you under the table. Don't let this Armani suit make you think I don't know how to eat. What'd you say? Oh, yeah. Yeah. We got to go get a vegetable plate. All right. And this is great. Let me tell you what I love. Before I read this, this is what I love about this and why context is so important. You know, back in the charismatic days, I always really loved this. We used to sing scripture courses. I can remember there would be entire services where we would sing everything right out of the scriptures. And some of them were a little, you know, I will sing unto the Lord, for he is triumphed gloriously. The horse and the rider fell into the sea. I mean, it's real, you know, it kind of sounds corny, but I always loved them. I loved scripture courses. And there was a song we did out of this. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimonies of the Lord are sure, making wise the simple. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. And we used to talk about it like it was the scriptures, the law of the Lord, the testimony. That's not what he's talking about. You read the whole chapter, he's not talking about scrolls or scriptures. He says the heavens declare the glory of God. He's saying the law of the Lord is it's invested in nature. That's why this is what he says. This is in The Voice, first four verses. He says, the celestial realms announce God's glory. You know, last night, it was late, and I'm going to watch SNL, even if it's not funny. I'm a diehard fan. And Ken had gone to bed, and I was sitting by the window, and it was a lightning. It was lightning enough that I thought, I better move away from this window. I mean, there was a couple of bolts there, and I'm like, eh, I don't know. And yet, there's something so beautiful about it. I mean, I sat there and watched the lightning, and there's something about it. I mean, I don't want to get struck by it, but I'm very taken by it, like the majesty of it. And I'm just like, wow, nature, you're awesome. Like, I'm a little bit afraid of you, and I'm glad I'm afraid of you. I want to be awed by it. That's the other thing. Not just if you don't like the azaleas, but if you're not kind of awed by it, like, how could you go to the Grand Canyon and be blasé about it? Have you ever been to Niagara Falls? When you're standing there on the Canadian side, you're standing by the water, and it's nearly overpowering. It's like there's a part of you, don't think I'm crazy, but there's a part of you that understands why people jump over the falls. There's something about it that's so, it's nearly like it wants to suck you into this bigger reality. And you start, it's not that you're thinking about suicide, it's just, I can't explain what it does to you. It's so loud and so powerful and so beautiful, and it's just water. And you're like, there's something about it. It's like overwhelming.
The negative ion is the same thing that's enlightening is in a waterfall.
Really? If you didn't hear what Natalie said, it's...
If you just said that, you went from lightning to a waterfall.
I have never heard that before. She's saying there's negative ions that gives you that same overwhelming feeling. Yeah, that's interesting. How do you know that? But do you understand what I'm saying? If you ever had that feeling, it's not like, I'm not wanting to kill myself, but I'm wanting to, I understand why. You know, over the years, so many people went over those falls. They would just wake up one day and go, I'm going over the falls. Why is that? There's something in you that wants to connect to something bigger than you, even if it could kill you, even if it's just I don't know. Like I'm not crazy about heights, but there's something in me that wants to get up on mountains, and I'm careful, you know. But I like that feeling of altitude and looking down on stuff. And yeah, oh Jesus, this one. I'm gonna get this one picture. I'm like, please God. He's Ellie with his camera, and I'm holding his ankle like, you are pushing me over the edge. The last time we were doing that, there were some guys rappelling off of the other side of Lookout Mountain, which we'd never been to. So we're like walking around the thing, and he went around, and I was like, Ken? And I know he's not a practical joker, so I thought, okay, this isn't good, because it was like one of those, and yet he was just couldn't hear me. But somehow he's not afraid. He's like teetering on a rock, taking a picture like, you, sweet Jesus. Anyway, we were looking, I've got this thing, I didn't realize I had this I have Xfinity, and I was looking at my bill this week, and it says you can connect your Facebook and Instagram to your TV. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. Well, all of a sudden, all your Facebook pictures come up. I have a ginormous screen. And so we were just sitting there looking at some of the pictures we've taken. I said, some of these don't even look real. Like, it looks like we're on a background, like a wallpaper or something. No, I was actually teetering on a rock. Like, even we were taking pictures of the Grand Canyon, and I'm like, take the picture. And yet, I want to go see it. I want to connect with it. I want to feel overwhelmed. As I tell you this, as much as I believe in personal responsibility and sovereignty in your own life, I still want to be awed. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be the center of the universe. I want to understand my part of it. I want to make a connection to it. I want to feel connected to everything else. And here he says, the celestial realms announce God's glory. The skies testify of his hand's great work. That's the law of the Lord he's talking about. Each day pours out more of their saying, each night more to hear and more to learn. Inaudible words are their manner of speech, and silence their means to convey. I'll give you an example. Weeping may endure for the night, but joy comes in the morning. That just the very fact that we have this concept of sunrise. Have you ever laid awake in the middle of the night and you think it's the end of the world, or you're worried about something, and then the sun comes up? And Judah sang that last week. The sun comes up, it's a new day dawning. That whole idea of the steadfast love of the Lord never fails, his mercies never come to an end, they are new every morning. Where God lives, there is no morning, but we have the concept, because the earth rotates, we have the idea or the perception of sunrise, sunset. I don't know if you saw, if any of you that follow my art Instagram, but I just did a painting this week called Perception. And the reason I painted it, it's a dark cloud. Bottom of it's all black. I just painted this. And depending on how you look at it, like some people would look at it and say, well, why is the cloud blocking out the sun? I look at it and say, no, the sun's breaking through. The sun's always there. So it's a matter of perception. And thanks for having that. But and it's for sale, by the way. Everything's for sale. I don't fly as much as I used to, don't enjoy it as much as I used to. But have you ever taken off in the rain and you get up above the clouds and you realize, wow, it's always a beautiful day, always. The sun is always shining. Just depends on what perspective you have. If you're beneath the clouds, it's gray and rainy and whatever. You get up above it. I've seen it happen so many times, especially back in the day when I used to fly a lot. You'd be getting late to the airport, and it's cold, and it's rainy, and everybody's irritable, and they've been in traffic, and people have got umbrellas, and everybody's, like, snarky. I would use another word if I weren't preaching. Snarky with each other. And then all of a sudden, when you get up above the clouds, you nearly hear a collective, you can feel everybody. It's like a paradigm shift. Like, oh, it is a beautiful day. It's always a beautiful day. And those are things that you learn, that clouds, even the trials you go through, they're just weather. They're, you know, one thing I'm glad for, you know, they say whatever weather you like, if you live in Atlanta, just wait till tomorrow and it'll be. I'm glad I live in that kind of environment. I'm glad that I live in a area of the world where there's a variety of weathers, because I think it keeps you adaptable to change. I really do. Sometimes you don't know how to dress, you know, when it's like, well, it's after Easter and I guess I could wear spring stuff, except that it's freezing. Remember, it was like really hot for a few days, and then a couple weeks ago it was winter, and you're like, wait, what the what? But I think it's actually good for you. I think it kind of keeps you a little bit off balance and a little bit, you know, you can handle whatever comes along. That's my feeling on it. Yet from here to the ends of the earth, their voices have gone out. The whole world can hear what they say. That's what I'm trying to get across to you today. People say, you know, you need to be natural. Well, then find out what is in your nature. Your nature is the right thing. Whatever, however you were made, you're not a mistake. Even the fact that however creation happened, you know, God through evolution, whatever. The fact is, go to the zoo. You will be, how many times you've seen the animals, you'll be blown away by the variety. Like, it's amazing how many different things there are. We went with his son Brandon and his girlfriend a few weeks ago to the aquarium. Ken had never been to the aquarium. We live right there at it, but he'd never been to it. It's as many times as I've been there, it's like, I can't. And this is just a small sampling of what actually lives in the ocean. Have you seen some of those creatures that live down at the bottom of the Pacific where there's no light and they look like aliens? They got like an eye sticking out. And you're like, is this for real? And it's like there's so much, and all of these things have adapted to their environments and they're totally fine with their environment. They're not trying to, you know, they're not searching pamphlets to find another place to move to. They figured out how to live where they live, and there clearly is a certain amount of evolution because things have evolved, and it's just amazing. I love when you, like, even I mentioned Lookout Mountain. We do go up there a lot. I grew up going to Rock City. I love Rock City, and I mean, it's corny and kitschy and everything, but I still love it. But when you look at all of these rock formations that are millions of years old, they're there because of water. Well, the Grand Canyon's there because of water. That's amazing. That shows you would think rock, if I said, would you rather have somebody throw some water on you or a big boulder at your head? You were like, I'd rather neither, but if I have to opt for one, give me the water. Well, as it turns out, long term, water is actually stronger than rock. What does that tell you? Just there's power and consistency. I'm telling you, everything that you need to know, just try this. Next time you don't have an answer, yes, go ahead and pray. I understand James 1:5, if you like wisdom, ask. But don't just ask in your prayer closet. Think about whatever Jesus was doing when he kept disappearing to pray. He wasn't inside. He was up on a mountain somewhere. What was he doing? Clearly, he was communing, yes, with whatever and whoever his Father was and is. But he's also communing with nature. Why else would he be able to come back and say things about the stars and about planting and about water? And you know, all of his miracles were very closely connected to the earth. I don't know if I'll ever go again, but I've been to the Holy Land a couple of times, and it's fascinating when you look at where Jesus was when he said some of the things that was recorded that he said, because it really gives you some context. Like certain things, I was able to preach a sermon on the Sea of Galilee. We were on a boat, and I was preaching about miracles on the Sea of Galilee, and I said, man, this just puts this in a whole other perspective, you know, like things like, have you caught any fish? No. We'll put the net on the other side of the boat. That's an amazing concept, that just a slightest change of thought can create abundance right where you are. You don't have to go to the other side of the lake. It's not that you're in the wrong place on the lake. You're in the wrong place here. What? You put the net on the other side of your brain is what you do. And that's where you catch all the fish. Man, I am preaching good today. Let's all stand. Sometimes I think I've lost it, and then I think, nah. You still got it. All right, let's all go take our shoes and socks off and run around Piedmont Park. Let's commune with nature. Did you get anything out of this today? Good stuff. That was all my outline, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay, thanks. I even got a thumbs up from Michelle when I sent the thing. She wrote back yesterday, good stuff, Bishop. I was like, oh, Lord. Michelle said good stuff. I knew it was going to be good then. I already said happy birthday to Francis, but I want to say happy birthday to Sammy, who came in, is here with his beautiful sister. I like everybody that was born on May 21st. And you're all, you know, it was kind of interesting. Of course, Judah had no idea it was your birthday, but I was thinking of The song was "When I Get Older, I Will Be Stronger." That's a great birthday song. I'm not getting older. I'm getting better. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Good stuff. All right. Please remain standing. If you will hit this, then I will speak a blessing over everyone. Thank you, voice, for
contributing to Metron is quick and easy.
Easy peasy.
Simply text the amount you would like to give
simply
to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit visionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
And if you have a check, just make it to JESM and Danny will receive that. And thank you. If you have cash, pay it forward. Go bless somebody. You might want to give it to somebody for their birthday or bless somebody who's here. And I just speak the life of the earth over you, the rhythms of the seasons, the power of the oceans and the stars and gravity and all the amazing things in nature. You're a part of that. You came out of that. You're strong. You're strong like the thunder. You're serene like deep water. You adapt to change like the seasons. You're bold as a lion. You're meek as a lamb. You're wise as a serpent. You're harmless as a dove. You mount up with wings as eagles. You're blessed. I bless the part of earth that you live on. I bless where your feet touch the earth. I speak health to all of us. Many of us are in recovery right now. We're getting stronger and better and healthier, learning how to guard ourselves from getting sick again, learning how to make contact with what's good and what's blessed and what's whole. I speak every good thing to you, especially to our birthday people. They have an exceptional day today. You wake up tomorrow saying, "This is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it." God bless you. Go in peace. Love you so much.